Cool. Right, 3, 2, 1. Welcome, dear listeners. This is episode 117 of the Devon Dice podcast, recorded on the 11th of February, 2024. In this podcast, we're going to be doing usual news, crowdfunding of board game industry, and games we've been playing. Hi, I'm Joel, host of the podcast, and joining me tonight is Sam.
Howdy.
Claire.
Hello.
And maybe Nick later on when he can be bothered. No, I'm kidding. He's got dad issues to deal with. Anyway, so, we're back again, another news podcast. And going on with the convention news, North Devon Board Gaming Weekend is coming up at the Fox and Hound. I've still got that wrong in the title there. We are doing the quiz. Me and Sam have been working furiously on the quiz, and it's coming together quite nicely. I actually had a chat with Matt at the hotel and described what we're doing, and he's over the moon with it. So hopefully it's going to be a good one. And also, keep a watch out. If you're on the waiting list, I know personally two rooms have been cancelled because people can't make it, which is really sad news. But so yeah, there's always a chance that if you are waiting, things might come around. Torbay Full Board Gaming Weekend has just been. Me and Claire was there. And next year's dates have already been announced. So if you're interested at this time, it's from the 31st of January to the 2nd of Feb. And as I said, me and Claire were there at the one previous gone, and we're going to have a little quick chat and go through our thoughts on it. It was a good weekend.
It was a good weekend. Yeah. I was thinking today, actually, I'm feeling very thankful that I like playing board games, because otherwise Joel would be getting the benefit of all these weekends and I'd just be at home with the kids. So, yeah. You know, it's win-win, isn't it, really?
But this weekend, the Torbay one is actually quite interesting because it's based in a cluster of hotels. It's the hotels also has its own facilities. It's got spa, gym, indoor bowls, a bowling alley, or a couple of bowling alleys, and loads of stuff going on like that. So actually, Sam, bring it up, this could be a good weekend for you to bring Megan along to, because she can go off and do all these activities that are inclusive with the price and enjoy herself like that.
I mean, a good plan, except for the fact that she pretty much hates all of those activities too, so I'm pretty much knackered.
Oh no. Oh, they do have a bar.
This weekend I was able to, at least I found one bar that Megan does actually like to go to, one that she'd prefer to go to over, well, all others. It was a bar in Bristol called Gin and Juice, and they have over 300 different gins.
Oh, Claire's there already. She's off.
Sounds like heaven.
It was very nice, but I mean, they had one craft beer, so I was able to at least have something. But yeah, Megan would be there in a shot. I think I might just go to King Street, where my favourite bars are, and just leave her there for the afternoon.
Oh, that's a shame, because I was actually thinking, like, quite a few of the dogs now wants to come and join. The other guys, especially the other podcasts, their light wives are not that much into the board games. And they're actually saying, actually, next year I could bring them, because they can go off and do like the spas and whatever else they got there, walk around Torbay and just enjoy the weekend like that. And they best of both worlds for them, really. So, and so I thought, oh, maybe this could be something Sam could come to. But anyway, I mean, it's
we'll
a shame.
We'll see.
maybe. It was really light-hearted.
It was good fun. There was quite a few people. Do you know what the numbers were?
About 80 people were there. Hmm. And so, yeah, it didn't feel clustered in the room. There was a nice big room. I never felt at one point that there was nowhere to sit or play. There was actually quite a lot of space to play. I don't know what's going to be like next year if the numbers improve, which hopefully it does in a way. It felt very inclusive. Everyone was getting on, and there was other things going on. There was like a D&D session that people were doing every day. and like you could join in. So they're like one hit D&D adventures. Someone was running. There was like a Ticket to Ride of experience. Not sure what it was about, but like you play Ticket to Ride and you had to like put it on social media that you were playing this. And the Exeter board game shop, Clifton Road Games, was there supplying the library for if you didn't have a game to play, which I took a trolley load of games today, didn't I?
Yeah, we have plenty.
And so did pretty much everyone else. I wasn't the only one that was rolling in a trolley full of board games. Because I did think, is this overkill? But then I felt better when I saw other people. So, but yeah, it was a really good weekend, and I'm actually looking forward to next year's one.
Good food as well.
Yeah,
and really good value for money.
Oh, definitely really good value for money. I mean, what was it, £140 or £44 per person for the two nights? That's your bed, breakfast, dinner. Yeah. There was so much food that in the evening, it's like, because it was just all buffet, it was just like, well, we could actually stick a load of this in like a box and have it for lunch. And yeah, I didn't really spend that much more money than that. We were allowed to take our own snacks in and drink. When playing in the rooms, that was a nice touch.
We took travel mugs, didn't we? So we just used our kettle in the hotel room to make our teas and coffees,
yeah.
Or filled it up in the morning when the coffee machine was working.
I mean, it's on the seaside, so there's plenty of fish and chips and Costa coffee in that nearby. There's a bar downstairs that you can go and order drinks and takeaway food. We had a very good weekend, I think, and it's very well organised.
We should probably talk about games rather than just,
we can do,
you know.
But we could leave that until what we played.
Okay, we'll leave that then, shall we? Okay.
So yeah,
I do notice that the hotel does have a very posh looking spa, so that might drag Megan out, but it would cost me at least another £200, so probably one to consider.
Claire will be able to tell more about that then.
So they have like a fire and ice experience, and you can get a discount on that because you're staying there. So I think normally it's about somewhere between £17 and £20 or something. But I think it's a little bit less than that, somewhere between 12 and 15 if you're staying there. They do a NHS discount as well, a blue light discount.
Even better.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
On top of the discount you're getting for
I don't know if it will be on top as, but I mean, it's worth an ask, isn't it? You know, you never know. But yeah, so there is that. And that's really nice. I've been to that before. And then with the kind of massages and stuff, there was also a discount on those. And they weren't ridiculously expensive. But there was a discount for them as well. But yeah,
well,
it was
you
nice
never know
then.
I might be able to convince Megan next year then. So yeah.
The pool was nice as well. And I used the gym on one of the mornings. The gym was okay.
I promised to use the gym, but then just couldn't get myself out of bed to do it.
He's up too late.
Come to that. So yeah, it was all good. It was fine. Lovely weekend. So moving on to news. New Vito Lacerda game has been announced, Speakeasy. And again, he's teaming up with the artist Ian O'Toole. So this is hitting the hotness on the geek. The thing that Sam pointed out is how big the board is.
It's ridiculous.
I think Sam's the only person I know that's got a table big enough to probably fit this board.
I mean, it's long enough, it's just not wide enough.
So that's how long the board is.
Will it fit on our table?
I think it'll fit on our table. It's just I don't think anyone will have any space to put any.
Oh, right. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
It's massive. There's a lot going on. Well, it's a Vito Lacerda game. That's only three player. So is it? That's four player. Why does the board look smaller like that? So unless
maybe
they're doing it in sections.
It looks like segmented, and it looks like maybe you have more sections with each player or something. Who knows?
Maybe.
But, yeah.
But again, I mean, it's like the box art looks beautiful because it's Ian O'Toole. And then all the other stuff that goes with it definitely speaks of like the old 1920s prohibition, isn't it? Like, era.
Yeah. If you like that kind of Boardwalk Empire.
Yeah.
What's it called? Untouchables kind of stuff. I think it's in that sort of vein. I personally hate like mafia style themed stuff, so it's completely out for me anyway, but I know an awful lot of people do like that mafia-y kind of gangster booze running kind of style stuff, so yeah. It's the service, so it's bound to be a good game, I reckon, but we'll see. It's just ridiculous size. I just can't believe how big it is.
Is it? Plus it's Eagle and Griffin, which means it's going to be on Kickstarter, and
yeah, it looks like it's guessing. The same sort of box size as On Mars, so it's that kind of portrait box shape, so I reckon it's probably the same just Eagle Griffin as well, so I suspect it's exactly the same box size and shape as On Mars, if that gives everyone an idea.
Yeah that's their usual format, isn't it? But yeah, looks interesting. It's probably going to cost a fortune, so I'll probably wait until it comes out and play someone else. So GameFound is becoming the new go-to crowdfunder for board games.
Yeah, so it's not taken. Yeah, it's not taken. It may not have taken as much money as Kickstarter from tabletop gaming last year. So Kickstarter took a total of $226.2 million for tabletop game projects. But GameFound took $56 million. But it's what's quite interesting there, I think, is that Kickstarter's had an awful long time being pretty much the only game in town, bar a few things that might have been on like Indiegogo or something. And this is really only about the third year maybe of GameFound running.
Yeah, I think
probably.
So. Yeah.
And probably only the second of it being a properly full run, dedicated platform. So to take $56 million is pretty impressive, and I'd say all of the biggest projects tend to seem to be on GameFound now. Most notably last year was Nemesis Retaliation, took over $12 million. Elder Scrolls took 4.5. The Witcher Path of Destiny actually outscored the other on Kickstarter. I don't know whether it was, I have to double check actually. So the Path of Destiny, which is the second Witcher game from the Go On Board team, took nearly $4.5 million. I can't remember what it took on Kickstarter with Old World. I think it was a little bit more than that, to be fair, wasn't it? But it's just interesting that GameFound is kind of rapidly catching up, I would say.
I mean, GameFound does a great thing of keeping the gates open. So, like, the Witcher game's been on funding for ages. I mean, primarily it's after pledge, but it's like it's not seemed to have stopped, and they keep raising money and keep raising money until it pretty much is being produced, and then and then you can pre-order it pretty much as well afterwards. So I think that's the difference, where Kickstarter just says, that's it, this is your day, it shuts, and then you can do pre-orders afterwards.
It's having a perpetual late pledge, which you'd always do by GameFound anyway. Obviously, GameFound would be the platform a good number of tabletop projects would use for their pledge manager anyway. So essentially, it's using exactly that, but saying, actually, you don't need to close the project if you don't want to. Just keep taking pledges. So it's just interesting that they're catching up, and I could easily see them kind of going, they're pretty much guaranteed to go higher again next year, and it'll be interesting to see if that number of Kickstarters comes down as well as theirs goes up.
Well, this is it. I mean, all the good games now seem to be on GameFound, and you look on Kickstarter and it's like, there's a few, but not as much as it used to be. And leading on to this, like, their newest customer that is now using GameFound is Simon, with their new GameFound Kickstarter launch, or game, I should say, which is A Song of Ice and Fire Tactics. Which they've just released. So now I don't know if they're trialing GameFound and see if it works just as well for them. Right, so a Song of Ice and Fire for Tactics from Simon. They come out with a massive big figurine that you can add onto your pledge if you really want one.
Oh, $260.
Yeah. Jeez. That's just the basic bundle. They've already got add-ons galore you can put on there. They did A Song of Ice and Fire before, where it was this miniature. So I don't know if they're relaunch it with new rules and things like that. I've not really looked into it too much. It's just the fascination of like how many people are going to purchase this, and then how much is this actually going to cost at the end?
Sorry, honey, just getting a word in.
And it's got the, it'll have the classic shipping to be charged later on. Oh yeah, and shipping with Shimon stuff is always about $100 more. So,
well, this is it.
Beware on that one.
So yeah. I'm just following it because out of pure interest, I want to see A, how much content they're going to keep putting out for this, and B,
Dragon,
how much
for interest is 78 centimeters tall.
Yeah, and there's a diorama that it actually fits onto. This is the interesting thing also with this, is that they're actually bringing in 3D terrain. So the diorama is like a dilapidated castle. That is, can either be part of the dragon or on its own. But there are also other bits of landscape. There's a whole box of landscape bits going into it. So it's interesting they're going down this path. As I said, I love to see what the final figure will be and how many people backing it. Then still...
To be fair, the if you just want the skirmish game, you don't care about the stupid mini and all the rest of it, is $60, which is, by Simon standards, is pretty good, I'd say.
Yeah, but no one can, not many people.
But no one's
going to.
21 people have gone for that.
So. Yeah, they're the ones that will sit there until the very end and say, "Actually, I need a pledge all in for this."
Yeah,
but I still don't think they're meeting their expectations. Like, it's $750,000, and I think they're still looking at the dizzy heights of when they did the Marvel games and things like that, when they were reaching millions within the first few days. And I'm wondering whether it's kind of, they've killed off a lot of their customer because
that
of,
and I'd also say maybe I don't, I mean, obviously the Song of Ice and Fire is still a really big property, but how big a property is it within gaming necessarily? I don't know. Is it, this would have been massive if it had been back when the TV show was on, but is it as big now? I don't know. It's kind of, not sure if that's part of it. It's kind of dropped, the whole Game of Thrones stuff's kind of dropped off the,
this is
off the cultural radar a little bit since then, since the TV show's gone. But I don't know.
You want a big dragon, plastic dragon?
No, thank you.
Okay, fine.
Not for that much money. I can think of better things to spend $260 on.
Yeah, don't panic. I won't be either. So, yeah. No one brought to attention is Last Light 2nd Edition. I don't know if you can class it as a 2nd Edition. It's just basically a reprinting of a game.
Yeah, 2nd Edition. I don't know if it... Yeah, it's just reprint, isn't it, surely?
Yeah. I don't know if they just have to put that so they can get it through their kind of the laws or the rules of game found.
Yeah, true.
Because I'm pretty sure they wouldn't have changed much. But,
Okay. So it says, what's the difference between the first campaign and this one? In addition to the brand new alien factions that are available and the offering of an upgrade kit to bring retail versions of Last Light up to deluxe, it's the same game with an updated rulebook. So they've added enough to basically get past whatever rules there are about just running the same campaign again, I guess.
Yeah. But, okay, so yeah, so this game actually, it intrigues me because apparently it's the first 4X game that can be played in an hour, which is quite cool.
Mm. Yeah, and it's an awful lot of people in, like, well, mainly the Dice Tower lot that kind of review it. or tangential ones like Secret Cabal, so, you know, they love it. I think it was Jamie from Secret Cabal's favourite game of last year.
Mm, so it was.
But how much of that is slight nepotism because it's designed by one of the Dice Tower crew? I'm not sure. I'm sure it isn't, but at the same time, I think it probably does have an impact. But I would certainly like to try it just because it seems to have been quite a hit.
Definitely. And I love the fact it's got a rotating board to simulate kind of a solar system in it.
So the board looks quite cool.
It does, doesn't it?
Mm. Yeah, and all the planets are kind of basically look like marbles that are kind of on sticks going around. Yeah. And yeah, it looks like it's got a really good production to it. So, yeah, I like the idea of the spot UV board, although no one's ever going to play in the dark, so I don't know.
I do love that when they put that on games. Oh, you keep glow in the dark dice as well, just to add to the more confusion. But again, it's another very expensive game to purchase if you want all of it.
Wow.
Yeah. But you're getting like all upgraded stuff and everything in it.
It's $115 if you just want the base game.
Yeah.
It's quite a chunk. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in the box. But are you going to get $115 worth of gameplay out of it? It's going to be a question, isn't it? Mm. Out with all these things these days. I mean, I think gone are the days when you'd have on Kickstarter 5 years ago, that game would have been 50 quid. 40, 50 quid for the base game and 80 quid for the deluxe or something. And now it's much more realistic, I suspect, in terms of the production and things. But at the same time, it puts it out of the majority of gamers' reach, I would say.
This is it. It's very... But do they have to do this to warrant the Kickstarter or the game found for it? I mean, it's been released in retail already.
Yeah.
So...
I think it's one of those you just make do with. I don't need the glow-in-the-dark stuff. I can wait until I play a retail copy. I'm happy enough, I think. Someone in our group, various groups, is going to have a copy of it somewhere.
Yeah, definitely. I think Nick's joined us, hasn't
he? I have indeed.
Hello, Nick. Recording.
Hello, folks. I'm
here. I've just remembered a bit of news that we should have put in here as well. Is the bring and buy... Games Expo.
Oh yeah, the rules changes.
Yeah. So going back a bit, we'll rewind time, we'll go back to more news. UK Games Expo organisers put out new rules for the bring and buy at the UK Games Expo coming this year. So basically, they don't want people bringing in hundreds and hundreds of items to sell. They want it to be more inclusive,
I think they want to go back to kind of how it was.
Yeah, they want to go back to
started, which was a casual way of people being able to go, I've got four or five games, I just want to try it, see if I can move them on.
Yeah.
And they don't want it to be like people turning up with transit vans full of games to stick in, which is what happened last year. And also, it's just like the amount of space in the hall that it now takes up. And the amount of staffing it takes, I can understand why they don't care if it shrinks a little bit in size, I suspect. So the main complaints are like, oh well, they're gonna ruin it and it won't be what it was and everything. It's like, well, that's kind of what they want. They don't want it to be what it's been like for the last couple of years. They want to take it back to about 5 years or so and make it something that's a bit more casual and easy to kind of manage because it's become very unwieldy. Last year when we checked in for the expo on the Thursday, there was a line of people checking in games. I think, well, Joel, you were one of them at one point.
I was one of them, yeah.
And it takes ages to get through because, understandably, they can only have so many people like there helping to check in games, and then there's the management of those games once they've been checked in, storage, security. Everyone's trying to get it all booked in at the same time. You've got some Wally turning up with like five great big cages full of games because he wants to clear a load of bankrupt stock that he's managed to pick up from somewhere. It's just ridiculous. So I'm fully in favour. I'm wondering whether 20 games is maybe a bit too limited, but at the same time, I think they have to set a limit somewhere. And
they had to set something, didn't they? Yeah, and they'll see how it goes this year.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things is like one of the complaints I saw was like, Ward, if you've only got a load of little games that you want to get rid of, it's like, well, bundle them. So don't put this in for £3, that in for £4. Why don't you just say small game bundle is a single item for £20 or something? And I think that's what I would
And small small items, I mean, they'll sell quickly, but generally, you for a bring and buy, I don't think you're going to make that much money on small items anyway.
No, exactly. Whereas people use it as a way of just getting rid of stuff and also getting a bit
Just cycling things in.
I think it's a positive change. And I think they'll basically, it's not like these rules are going to be set in stone. They're going to use this as a benchmark to sort of go, right, we're resetting. We're going to see how this goes this year, and we'll adjust things again for next year based on feedback. So I think it's a good start.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I know I took about 33 items in last year. So yeah, I mean, 20 would be quite easy for me. But also the other rule change is there's no price changing, isn't there? Like the Sunday.
That's right. Once it's in, that's it.
Yeah, which is quite good because it stops. Everyone seems to bundle in now on Sunday morning, saying, "Right, I'm going to change all my prices and put them dirt cheap." I tried this year or last year, couldn't find any of my games, couldn't be arsed with it, so I just left them. And actually, sold a few more items at the standard price, so it doesn't hurt.
That's one of the things that stops me from even doing it because I'm like, having tried it at Aircon this year and ended up just giving away 3 or 4 games because I could not find them. And bear in mind, that was not even a quarter of the size of the UK Games Expo one. I dread to think what I would do. I mean, I don't want to be in a position like I did there where I was just like, I can't find them. I'm just going to go to the thing and say, you can have them if you're okay with that. Because the Expo have literally just said in that thing as well, they don't want to be left with a bunch of games that aren't selling. You know, they don't want to have to deal with getting rid of them. It's not as easy as just saying, okay, well, they could just give it to a charity shop or something, but cause it's not quite that easy if you've got literally a van load of games that you've got to try and get rid of. I think it's right that they're kind of resetting it to be a bit more of a casual extra to the show rather than it becoming a huge feature. A bunch of my friends that we go up with every year, they normally take a bunch and they've already gone, I don't think I'm going to bother this year. Or maybe they'll put in 3 or 4 things, you know, and I think that's exactly the influence it should have. It's stopping people. The other thing is, like, I get that some people might think it's like a huge part of their expo, and I feel sorry for them if that's what they like doing and whatever. But like I say, queuing to get in to either, you know, check when you take into account queuing to check in your games, then queuing to go and view games in there yourself, try and find the games that you want to get yourself from a buying perspective. Then you want to go and change your prices, so you've got to queue up to get in to go and change your prices. Then you've got to find all your games, re-sticker them all. It's just like, it's just the admin of it. I'm like, what on earth are people doing?
Yeah.
If that's all you're going to the expo for, just get an eBay shop. Crikey.
Exactly. If they have that many games and they want to go to the expo, they can get a booth.
Stand.
Organize them all sales in advance, like on the Board Game Trading and Chat Facebook group, and just set up, say, I'm going to be set up in this table in the open gaming area for 3 hours. Come and get the game.
Yeah.
If they have that many to sell, then
maybe there's an avenue for Expo to say, if you want to be one of these traders that's got a bunch of stuff, then here's a stand that we will rent to you.
I mean, they could do a cheaper deal, I think, than because you don't need a large space for that.
It'd be a flea market area, wouldn't it? Really?
Yeah.
Because I can remember if the expo has any secondhand game store like sales places, anyway, like Essen does. Essen has a number of stores which are just secondhand games. But I can't remember any that have any.
I don't think there is.
No, that was always bringing by, wasn't it? So I can see they could make a case.
I wonder
for
if they would do that. Yeah.
Here's your stand. You can use it. You pay a certain fee for just having space at that thing, but you have to man it yourself. You have to go there and you have to do handling of cash and everything all yourself. And if you're going with like 200 games, well, surely it's worth your time to maybe try and sell them. So do it. Say, I'm going to do it for the Saturday. I'm going to have, you know, £100 worth of stand space or something for X hours and try and flog your games. Or something along those lines, anyway. I could see something like that happening, maybe.
Well, I mean, we, me and Nick know someone that's notorious for. He basically lives in the bring and buy, and I think he's probably part of the reason why they've gone this way because he would be the one that drives up with a van full of games, put them all in, then he'd hover around the games being sold, pick up all the cheap ones, and then re-enter them back in for high prices.
Oh, really? Oh, my God. So, yeah. That's something else that you... Yeah, I mean, I'd heard of that was the sort of thing that happens, and you just think, completely devoid... You know, that's against the spirit of the whole thing, isn't it?
Well, that's it. Yeah. But he's done it for years, ever since I've... Like, when it was in the Hilton, that's where he lived. It was the Bring and Buy. I never saw him anywhere else but the Bring and Buy. And so, yeah, I think it's really dampened his this year's weekend for him. So. But he's a guy, like you were saying about having the stand, a little flea market stand. Well, yeah, they should be going to these people and say, right, here's a stand, 100 quid for the weekend or something like that. Sell your stuff. He'll make that back. If he's that good at like selling the games like that, then he'll definitely make that back. So,
absolutely.
Even if it comes with an exhibitor's pass for him, I mean that's a bonus to him at the end of the day. But so yeah, but good news for some, not so good news for others.
Yeah, let's see how it goes. I think it's a good. I think it's a good change.
Nick, we were just done the crowdfunding. Do you want to talk about your friends or the people you know doing it?
Yeah. So game. This one is called Isla, or Isla. I can't remember which way they pronounce it. This is from Ocean City Games, who were based in Plymouth up until about November last year. They moved up to Leeds, but they are UK kind of small design team of three people. And this is a competitive roll and write games for 1 to 4 players, where you are rolling. You'll have polyhedral dice from a D4 all the way up to D20, one of each type, and all of them get rolled, and everyone gets to simultaneously pick one of those dice to use. Once you've used a die, you can't use it again, that type of die again, until you find an unlock space. And you're basically trying to move around this island map, picking up, I think thematically you're taking photos and artifacts and things, and you're exchanging them in for kind of a set collection to get points. And it's a kind of a race to get to the end of the map, because you get extra points if you exit quicker. And you want to try and fill up as much space as possible, because you lose points if you don't fill the map entirely. So it's a fun little 30 to 45 minute roll and write game, which using some fun polyhedral dice, which is always nice. But it's local design team. So have a look at their Kickstarter. It's on for another 17 days as of time of recording. It's not a hugely high backing goal. So hopefully they'll make it.
Yeah, £30 to get a copy of this. It's not bad.
Yep. And for UK, it's only £6 shipping as well, so it's a decent shipping price if you're in the UK. If you're in the US, probably not so much. But I think there's probably going to be more UK sales for this one.
The funding goal was
£6,500.
I think possibly they might struggle with that.
We'll see. I don't know what their estimates were, but
yeah, I know like producing games like this is expensive.
If you're a small little company like this, then you don't have that benefit of being able to do high print run volumes.
That's it. Let's hope they do make it to their funding goal.
Take a look.
Keep on that. Right, what we've been playing. So, as I said, me and Claire have been to the Torbay weekend. And I played quite a lot of games. Claire actually did very well at playing games.
Yeah.
And thankfully, Becky from Whose Turn It Is Anyway podcast taught Claire Ark Nova, which is really exciting. Because it saved me a job too.
I might have got grumpy at Joel if Joel had been teaching me.
So what did you think then?
I loved it. It was great. Yes! I really enjoyed it.
Yay! Not the best to play it with.
It was really good. There's lots to it, so it did, you know, it takes a lot of thinking when it's your first time playing it.
And you played with the expansion.
I did play with the expansion as well. I probably need to play it again relatively quickly whilst I still remember how to play it. Mm. Otherwise, I feel like I'll be learning it all over again. Mm-hmm. But I really enjoyed it. It was really good.
Mm-hmm.
The artwork's lovely.
Well, it's photographs, isn't it? Yeah.
But still, you know.
I think the graphic design is what you mean as well. It's like, because my main thing when I first saw it was just like, oh, it's just the photographs. It's not very interesting. But actually, the graphic design kind of, when you get it, your head around it, the graphic design is what makes it appealing, I think, as well.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It was good.
Problem is, Becky has a nice souped up copy, so she's got like 3D printed pavilions and stands. And I was like,
very nice.
A cup of coffee that looks spoiling like it's actually got coffee.
And I was like saying to Claire, like, when I get my copy out, don't be disappointed because it's not as good as this.
Yeah, I had a lot of pavilions in my.
You did.
I had a lot of pavilions in my zoo at one point. I think I had more pavilions than animals actually. Mm. My my free range monkeys were very happy in the pavilions.
She had some kind of safari thing going on.
Yeah.
Love it.
And and I had quite a few coffee shops, so everyone had places to go and they could, you know, mingle with the free range monkeys.
And it was and at the end it was very close with the scoring, wasn't it?
It was.
You scored positive points because you were doing the mean version of scoring.
Yes, I did. I got 6 and Becky got 10.
So,
or 106 and 110.
Yeah.
The scoring's mean, isn't it, if you do it properly? Yeah. So I just did all that work and I got 6 points.
That's why they introduced the...
That's why they've changed it,
The snowflake scoring.
Snowflake scoring. I like it.
I mean, that's harsh.
It is depressing.
6 points.
It is depressing when you do get negative points in it.
Well, Becky said the first time she played it, she got it was either the first time or, anyway, another time. I think it was the first time. Minus 45, bless her. Without adding the 100 on.
So. I've seen someone get like minus 82 or something. And
yeah.
If someone just can't, they get a bad synergy and they don't get that engine going. Yeah. And someone else is racing ahead with a really good synergy, then which is why they've done it, which is fair.
And luckily, I think because I was playing with Becky, so Becky and I have had quite good conversations about games over the weekend, and neither of us are particularly good at looking at what the other person is looking for and then stopping them. At our own thing. So it works really well when we play together because we're both just doing the same thing. Mm. Like we're not trying to kind of be like, oh, I'll take that one just so that she doesn't get it because we're no good at it. So if I was playing with somebody else, it might not have turned out so good.
They're quite nice. Is this actual official, is it? Or was this...
No, that's on Etsy.
On Etsy.
Becky bought hers from Etsy. Apart from the cup of coffee, she made that herself.
Yeah, but she also had free tone. So we're looking at
she had pavilions and colours on the pavilions,
outlooks. And that's been put on the chat group. So...
We could put that in the show notes as well.
So one of my games, and this is where I mentioned that I couldn't get up in the morning. I played another game of Castles of Burgundy Special Edition. So it's like already gone midnight on Saturday. Claire and that, most people going to bed. And there's me, Marcus, and a couple others. Like, what are we going to play? Marcus is like, let's play... an hour and a half, that's it, that's all I got. I said, that's great, that's all I think I can do. So he's like, put a few options out there, and then we said, oh, let's all play Castle Burgundy, everyone knows how to play that. And then I said, oh, because he's got a special edition, I said, oh, are we playing with the Vine expansion? He's like, oh, I haven't played that yet, do you know how to do it? I said, yeah. So we put that out as well. 3:30 in the morning, we finished.
Oh my word!
Oh, we were hallucinating by the end of it.
There's a couple of very good pictures on the Facebook on Devon Dice Facebook page. If you want to have a look, they look like they've gone a little bit crazy from exhaustion. Quite funny.
And what really topped it off is because it's Marcus's game. He's never played with it. And he just thought, I don't want to do the expansion. I'm just going to do the main board and see how it goes, where I focus purely on the expansion. And I was trailing in a point when it came to the end of it. But then when we scored up my expansion board, and it goes on clusters of coloured grapes. So the more you've got of the same grape and you've picked up that token for that colour, it will accumulate score. So the score gets progressively bigger depending how size your cluster is. And I think in one group I scored 45 points. Because I think it's a group of 9. Then I scored 10. And then I scored 3 or something like that. So I scored like 58 points or something ridiculous. And I think Marcus was like about to chuck his game out the window. He's like, because then I won the game. And he was just like, this is ridiculous. This is broken. I'm not having this. and then he realized, and I didn't know this, David Turtsey done the expansion for it. And he's like, that's it. I'm calling David. I'm going to have it out of him.
He did the solo mode. It wasn't the... Oh, it was Stefan Feld did the expansion.
Oh, David so it was Stefan.
Stefan did the actual expansion. So you can get on the line to Stefan Feld instead. Tell him he's broken the game for me. It is an expansion where you have to focus on it. You can't let someone run away with it just that. Everyone has to be equally in it or someone will run away with the game.
Yeah, so I don't know if he's still in two minds of it, but he was fuming at the end of it. the other funny bit was, and we didn't realise we were doing it because we were trying to pack the box up and it's not that easy to get it all back in again. Is that like Marcus was putting things in, but then I was taking things out because I was trying to repack it, and then Marcus is putting things in, and then I'm putting things in, Marcus is taking things out. And the other two guys were stood there just laughing at us because we were like arguing about scoring, why unpacking the box again in different ways. So I think it was just more the tiredness was kicking in. So But yeah, it was a great game. I absolutely loved that game. And it wasn't with the acrylic tiles, it was the standard cardboard tiles, which made no difference, I thought. So
that's good. Yeah. I just saw you had the 3D castles though.
Yes, we put the 3D castles on, which could actually be quite lethal if you're not too careful or drunk.
Yeah, they can be quite sharp if you're not you tread on them or something.
There's some very sharp points on those castles. So yeah.
Very cool.
Nick, what you got?
So what from my list have I played? Because I wasn't on the last one that we did discuss play games, so I've got some left over from that. Last month or so, I played Rome in a Day with some guys at the local game group, which is an Alicat Games release from last year, designed by, I'm going to present this name, Evgeny Petrov. And this is a I Split You Choose kind of terrain building game, and it's fairly light, and it plays quite quickly. It says 20 minutes on the box, and it is legitimately about 20 to 25 minutes to play it. We play it 2-player and 3-player, and it works very nicely. You basically have every round you have 5 hex tiles with one of the different types of terrain on, and you have 2 buildings, which are, if you think of King Domino, where you have the multipliers of the crowns on the domino tiles. These are like multipliers for the regions that you build up, and you're trying to build up adjacent areas of the same color, and then you have a building which you want to be on or adjacent to that color, because then it scores it. And you start with 5 tiles on a round, and you have to split them into 2 piles of any size each. You could have 2 and 3, 4 and 1, 5 and 0 if you really wanted to. And everyone does this secretly, and then we reveal, and then you are drafting, you're deciding from another person what size of the thing you want. And you get that, and then you can rearrange the tiles into whatever you want to. And at the end of the game, you're trying to score the most from having adjacent tiles. And it's a nice little thinky tile lane game. And I don't tend to like I Split You Choose mechanism in games, but this actually worked quite nicely for me. I quite enjoyed it. So that was a good one. That was well worth trying out. And it's fairly cheap as well. It's quite a small box. So take a look.
Awesome. Sam, what you got?
I'll quickly cover Art Society, which we've talked about previously, because you and Claire have played it. But it's the new-ish tile placement game that was released at Essen, where you're essentially auctioning off tiles, which are paintings, to fit onto your wall to have the most decorative and complete wall possible. Finally got to get my copy played, and yeah, really like it. I have decided I prefer it to World Wonders and kind of wish I'd opted for that as my freebie instead. World Wonders is fine, but it takes ages. Art Society takes half the amount of time. And
definitely.
The good thing with Art Society is that it's not polyomino, it's all rectangles. So,
yeah.
But it gives you the same thing of trying to optimise the space that you're using and things. So it's just quicker and easier to kind of figure, I think. And it also looks really appealing. I love the kind of real but fake art in it. So it's all kind of like Munch's Scream, but actually with, you know, like a different character in it or whatever. So all of that kind of looks really appealing at the end of it. And the one thing I didn't realise from looking at it when I saw the pictures is that the box itself is like die cut. So you've got like a two-tier box lid, which is amazing. Just from a presentational point of view, it's kind of weird and
it's
cool.
It's totally unnecessary, but yeah, I think it adds so much to the aesthetic.
Yeah, it's a wonderful touch. And also the price point is, I think, compared to some other games, is really good. It's like, what, 32 quid or 34 quid or something? And that's actually, for what you get in the box, I think it's pretty much a bargain, comparatively speaking. So
yeah, definitely.
Yeah, really good. I'm really impressed with it. It's gonna stick around for a while in my collection, I think.
Yeah,
very cool.
I mean, me and Claire both played it at the weekend gone separately, different people, and it was quite funny because I played with Marcus, who literally taught it to people on Thursday at their game group. So then we're dealing it out, and I'm teaching two new people how to play, and we're getting to like join in frames. And you get these bonus little token tiles to fill in gaps. And I'm saying, yeah, so each one that it joins to, you get a token per frame it touches, the one you place. And he's like, no. You get one for each frame. And I was like, no, it's not. Because that'd be ridiculous. And he's like, no, but that's how Rodney Smith taught it. I was like, no, I'm pretty sure he doesn't. I haven't watched the video. I'm second guessing myself. So someone checks the rules and he's like, yeah, it's just this. And then we're playing it and I put this big cluster of frames together, but I took like a two token. And he was like, no, you get five tokens because you've got a big cluster of the same frame. I was like, no, Marcus, it's your starting tile touching everything. And then he's like, read the rules again. And he's like, oh, yeah. Well, that makes more sense. It's not what did he call it? Decoration Society.
Deco Society.
It's Art Society. It makes more sense now, doesn't it?
Oh, bless him.
So, yeah. So it was one time I got the rules all right and not wrong, as I usually do. But anyway, so yeah. Yeah, it has become a big favourite and a great game. Claire, you're...
Yeah, so I also with Becky, from Whose Turn Is It Anyway, played Framework. It is a game by Rosenberg and Siegmund. Is that how you say the other guy's name?
Rosenberg,
classic.
Yeah. So it is basically kind of place your tiles... and trying to match up, so each tile has got like a frame in it. The frames are, you've got like wheat and I think it's grass and wood and bricks, those kinds of things. So you're sort of typical
resource collection.
Typical and Euro, yeah.
Yeah. And you have to link sort of the different frames. So like if you've got wheat, for example, you try and link as many of those together. And then in the middle of the tile, it's got, again, one of the resources with a number in the middle. So like it might have a number 5 with wheat in it. You have to try and link 5 wheat cards to that tile. And then when you do, you then put your counter on top of that number to show that you've done it. And the game ends, and the winner is the person that manages to get all of their tokens out. So it's... Do you call that a work of placement?
No.
No. There we go. See, look, I was trying to technical.
Bless you.
It's kind of tableau building.
It's that weird thing.
It's a re-implementation of...
have your own.
Oh, so it is tableau kind of...
Yeah, thing, so you have your own... You just work on your own bit that's in front of you, and build it out as you go. Each time, you pull three tiles out of the bag, put them in front of you, and then if you're the first player, you choose the first one and then place it. And then if you can put one of your counters down, then you do. And then the second person, and then the second player chooses one, and then the other one gets discarded.
Okay.
And then the next person pulls out another three. And you do the same again. Obviously, if there's more players, you pull out more. So it's always one more than the number of people that are playing. But yeah, it was good fun and really easy to learn and not a really long game to play. So it was nice just as a kind of quick, easy game.
I noticed it's a re-implementation of Nova Luna, which is one of
we did
2 years, 3 years before. It very similar mechanically, having a look, which is why it rang a bell when the player was describing it.
The framework is newer.
Framework has came out 22. Nova Luna was 2019.
So I played Nova Luna, which when Claire was explaining it, I was like, "Oh, that sounds quite similar." So
yeah, it was good.
So yeah, that's the way you want to again is what it is.
I think it's a game that you could really easily teach to somebody that's not really played a lot of board games as well. Like, it was really simple to learn.
So that, really that abstract feel and...
And you can play it by yourself as well. I didn't, so I don't know how you do.
Oh, it does. But... Just play for solo.
Nick's all over that now.
Oh, yeah, I'm straight in there.
My other game I played at the weekend, and this is actually a game I brought back from Essen, a little card game called Odd Shop. So Odd Shop is odd because it's like six mechanics all mashed into this little card game. So it's an auction game. It's a trick taking game, set collection. What else was I thinking? There's all sorts going on in here, and it is you're bidding for these different artifacts or relics or magical items. You're trying to collect sets of that color, but it could be a fake or it could be real. So depending on there's always five actually. So there's always five cards put out. And these cards that go on the bottom are whether it's fake or real or unknown. But they're face down. And then you put these other cards, which are the items, on top. And they have two different values on it. But you don't know what they are. And you have a hand of credit cards, they're called. And you will use these to bid on items, and everyone's got the same at the beginning. And if you win an item, then you discard your credit cards out for the round, and you carry on until all items have been purchased. And then at the end of it, before you look at whether the card's real or fake, you can actually bid off of people or make deals with people saying, "Oh, I want your item. I'll give you 30 credits out of your own value," and you can do things like that. Not much of that happened. People did try, but some people didn't go with it. But then once everyone's done all their trading, you can look at whether your card is or your item is real or fake by looking at it, and then you turn it to the value, so it's like a double-sided card, up and down. But then, if you collect, in our game, we're playing four player. I think if we collected four of the same color, you like get 200 points. And it depends how many people are playing. So five players, you have to collect five of the same or three of the same. No, three of the same, it gets less and less, something like that. But then also some of the cards, like the red cards, were like clothing. And if you can get like garments that go together, then it doubles their values, which was actually another interesting way of scoring it. And actually, the rules were terrible. I can tell you that. That's why I probably haven't got. I didn't get around to it. It took pretty much all four of us playing it, going through the rules and saying, "Yeah, it should be done like this. It should be done like that." But when we got it actually down, we started playing. It was like, "This is actually really quite good. This is quite good fun." And with a lot of banter going off and like, "Oh, you got to stop him getting that," kind of thing. Or there's a bit of meta game going on because there's a turn order or bidding and things like that. So yeah, it's actually not a bad... Now I've got the rules down, it's actually a nice little card game. So I'm quite happy I picked that up. So that was Odd Shop. I don't even know who made it. Yeah.
Jolly Dutch
Jolly
Productions.
Dutch, yeah. From the same people, Sam, I got you that Tricky Badger from. Badger.
So, very cool, yeah. So my next one, what should I talk about, which one? I will do Taverns of Tiefenthal. So on Monday last, we played with the expansion, the Open Doors expansion, which came out 2 years ago? Yeah, no, three years ago. 2021. So this is an expansion to Taverns and Tiefenthal, which was it's a Wolfgang Walsh design from, I want to say 2020 or so, 2019, which is kind of a deck builder with tableau building type things, kind of a fun mix of things. But you're basically trying to run this tavern and encourage patrons to come along, drink the beer, which gets you money, which then you can buy more things to improve your tavern, which lets you create more beer, which attracts more customers. You're trying to get the most points. And the base game had five modules you could add in, which started you off as a very kind of almost a Kennerspiel level game, went all the way up to a proper Euro style game. And the Open Doors expansion adds four more modules onto that, and you can add a whole lot in at the same time if you want to. And we added the whole lot in because we figured why not.
Why not?
It ups the complexity to. It says on BGG it's about 3 out of 5 waiting when you add the expansion in, and that's about right. You have to know how to play the base game, otherwise you'll be completely flummoxed by everything. But if you know the base game well, then adding these expansions in was it just felt natural adding them in. Actually, it was really, really well integrated. And they add in, if I can remember, I don't know if BGG is even going to give me the information. It's not going to give me information about what the rules are. So if I go from memory... So you're adding in a module which lets you serve wine to customers, which you can do. They basically replace the dice placement, which is another thing I forgot about mechanics. So you're all rolling dice and then drafting the dice in turn order to then place on the cards to activate them, which generate the money to get you things. So there's a wine cellar, and you can get a sommelier to help you serve wine. And again, there's an upgrade bit for that. There is a bedroom area where you can attract guests to come and stay the night, or the nobles. You can put the nobles in the guest rooms, and each there's four slots available, and you can slot in one noble in each one to activate a certain power that each one has. And then you have that for the round, effectively, and those just tweak the rules slightly. They let you do extra things. There's a couple of new types of cards, which lets you do various things. Like one of them, the matriarch, I think, lets you pick the value of the die that you place there and how much money you get. And then there are some kind of shared goals which you're going for, which is you're trying to achieve one thing on the left and it gives you the benefit on the right. And these are randomized each game. There are three of them in the game. Every time you manage to do one of those, gets you a 5 VP chip, and if you get all three, you get this matriarch woman who comes along and does things. And they all have special abilities. Once you achieve them, you can then activate that special ability at any point on the game, and it's a one-use thing. It really mixed up the game really quite nicely. It raised the score threshold quite significantly. We were scoring just into the 200s rather than the usual kind of 150-ish. But it didn't make it that much longer. It took us 3 hours to play, but that was with a half hour sorting out the bits and teach and things with the expansion. So it was about 2.5 hours. I think you could play it in 2 hours once you know the extra rules fine. But it was a lot of fun. We had a real good time playing. That was four player as well. So we all knew the base game, but none of us played the expansion. So it played very nicely. So a welcome addition to Taverns of Tiefenthal is the Open Doors expansion.
Yeah, we played this and the expansion. Yeah, it adds a lot. And I think it took us all night to play as well, but it did add a nice touch to a lot of it. So
yeah, because I find the base game a little bit vanilla for my taste. I wanted a bit more complexity, and it's with all five modules in, it's fine. It just needed a bit more, and I think the Open Doors expansion does add in that extra bit that I wanted from the base game.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Sam, your newest game.
So this last week I got to try MLEM Space Agency, which is the new game from Rainer Knizia.
The
Cats in Space game. Let's get this out of the way first. It's got nothing to do with cats, other than the fact there's cats on the board. You really don't have to worry about there being cats.
Oh, Rainer Knizia.
Yeah.
The good doctor does it again.
Yeah. I mean, there's very little theme going on, as normal. Essentially, this game is Celestia in space, in essence.
Ah, right.
So it's got that kind of thing where everyone's on the same ship, one person is controlling the ship, in this case rolling a set of dice, depending on the level you're on, which is judged on a card run. You're either going to have four, five, or six dice being rolled at any one time, or for a round. And the idea being you're trying to make it as far along the track as possible. But the one thing it does differently to Celestia is that in Celestia it's kind of like almost like an all or nothing, or you get to certain points and you get a random-ish points card. And you're sort of trying to collect as many points as you can. In this one, you have a set of eight tokens, or cat tokens. They're all sort of cat head-shaped. Believe me, that is the last element of cat-relatedness to this game. Each of those tokens has a different kind of power that can be used on that turn.
Yep.
So it might be it grants the commander of the mission to use the token as a one. Or it might be extra points on certain, whether it's on a planet or extra points if your token ends up on a moon, that kind of stuff. So cutting to the story short, as you're travelling along, you can choose to hop off the spaceship before it carries on its mission. If the ship ever crashes, that's it, it's done and dusted, mission over, no one gets any points if you're left on the ship. So the idea is you're trying to push your luck to try and get as far along as you can and judge when to get off the ship and score the best points. Mm-hmm. If you end up on planets, those are done as like a kind of area control. So if you've got the most tokens on any given planet, you'll get the most points from that planet. And the further along the track the planet is, the more points that planet is going to be worth. And each planet also has some moons where you can hop off, but the first person to hop off will get the first empty space, which will generally be worth more points than the last empty space. Mm-hmm. That's kind of roughly it. There's a couple of other little mechanics and stuff that happen. I think the very last space is like deep space. If you get to deep space, that's where it's worth loads more points. Very first round we played with, I think it was five of us. And Simon, who taught the game, said, "We're going all the way to the end. Believe me, we're going all the way to the end." So we thought, okay, cool. We crashed before we got to the second planet, I think. So it was right, I don't believe anything anymore. It's all down to luck of the dice as normal, but I don't mind that. Yeah. I really don't mind that. That's what I like. And same with Celestia, it's about rolling those kind of dice and just seeing if you can make it further than someone else. The one thing I would say is, do I like it compared to Celestia? It's kind of horses for courses. I think it adds a little bit more to the Celestia format because you've got that area control-ish element. You've got those little powers that are on your tokens as opposed to it being a card that might be played from your hand. But I like that in Celestia where the ship's crashing but you immediately play your jetpack card and woohoo, I can get off here while everyone else crashes. So all those little bits are missing from this game because you don't really get that. Everyone can see straight away what you're doing before you start. So you don't have that sort of hidden element of it to it, but at the same time it plays fine. You know, it's again Rainer Knizia style. It's a good solid 6 out of 10, maybe more depending on what your personal feelings are, but it's a perfectly reasonable game. Not one I'm going to be bursting to look at play again, but I'd happily play it if someone else wanted to. It's that kind of thing.
Yeah, very nice. That's what it looks like. that kind of that level, when I connect to your level.
But don't worry about it if it's cats game, a cat game you're after. It's got cats in it in a picture.
It's not really cats.
What, one of the planets does have a paw print on it. I'll grant that.
There we go.
Awesome. Yeah. You can also play that on a Board Game Arena, so
you can try it out. And Celestia.
And Celestia, yeah.
Yeah. So I need to I need to try the BGA version of Emblem to see how it is, because the Celestia version isn't terribly great, I don't think.
I think I tried to play that and it was just like, ugh, what's going on here?
It's much nicer playing it on the table.
Definitely. Oh, that should close up this episode if everyone's all done.
Yeah.
So thank you for listening to our podcast. If you enjoyed the episode, let us know. You can send us any comments in many ways via Discord, email, Twitter, or no, X, Facebook, social media sites. You can find all the links in the show notes below in the description below. Me and Nick are on Blue Sky, but I haven't used that since signing up to it. And
I saw this morning, actually, Blue Sky has now removed the need for invitations.
Oh, really?
Really opened up. So come and join us, folks. Way.
Yeah. you can find everything we talked about in this show in the show notes. All links are there. Thanks to Nick. Guys, it's time to say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, all.
And goodbye from me.